Yeah.
I didn't think about that. I'm sorry. Let me see.
I
Do, do,
thought
do.
you were gonna record it on something else. I'm sorry.
You know, I can actually. That's a good idea. Yep. I do it on my phone. It's a really good idea. So I'm gonna turn you up. Do a voice note.
Now I press record, and if
Oh,
it's
you did?
not recording, I will, send you this link or however
Yeah.
it works.
Most likely it's going to convert and then it's going to send you to your email. The email is registered. And when it sends it there, then just email it to me.
Okay.
Okay, great. All
Okay.
right, great.
I got
All
it.
right, I'm starting here. Okay, so yeah. So, Dr. Shania, you were a student here at PC. And again, we're probably at around 23%, I think, of our student body and student population now is considered non-white, right? Or whatnot. So, many people, Dr. Ingram, other folks who have been here for a number of years tells us how that was not always the case for sure. And so I just want you to share a bit about your time here as a student. You are a native of this area, from Greenwood and kind of Clinton. All this is your stomping grounds or whatnot. So what was it like here as a student who was also a native, and what made you, what made PC appeal to you, to come here and to want to be here?
Yeah, so let me re reflect back. So when I graduated from high school, I knew I wanted to go to college. And my parents, my mom, I'm from a single parent family. My
Okay.
mother always said, you're going to school. No doubt, you're going to school. And I was able to work with, at that time, his name was Lathan Turner. And he actually came to my high school and helped me with all of the college prep planning. And I did college visits. I was very active in high school with our volleyball and men's basketball and women's basketball teams. So interesting. And also, I was in ROTC. So I went to PC for a ROTC rifle tournament. And when I was there, we got a tour. My friend Sharon Williams gave me a tour, and we just fell in love. It was myself and Janice Abney, who we were both from Greenwood and grew up together and everything. And so we kind of fell in love with it. We, walked around, saw things. It was a beautiful place. It was 45 minutes from Greenwood. So it was close enough, yet far enough away. And so I didn't want to go too far, because like I said, single parent, only child, and I was not ready to go a long way from my mom. And so everything was great until I saw that price and told my mom what that price was. And she was like, "Oh my gosh, that's a mortgage. That's the cost of a house." And I think at that time it was 40,000. I think, and don't quote me on this one because I don't exactly remember. I'm trying to think back to how much I owed Sallie Mae after I left. And I don't remember exactly how much it was, but it was a lot of money. Now, PC provided a good financial aid package, but not enough to cover the whole thing. And so again, Lathan Turner helped me, and I was able to get them funding. And I told a lot of my friends from Greenwood, and I said, "Hey, PC's pretty cool." And so my high school coach actually introduced me to the coach of volleyball at PC, and I got what was called a work scholarship with athletics. So it was something totally different. Like, usually they only give scholarships to the athletes, right? But she was so supportive and said, "No, you really want Sean to come there. You really want to do, So she did that, and that was a work scholarship, and I worked with volleyball and women's basketball from day one until the end. And so that helped to pay for my college also. So when we got there, our class had 13 Black women, which was the most ever. And so Veronica Brown, Lucy, Janice Abney, Carla Jones, like these were the people we all got there at the same time. And all of us have been very active in high school with in our churches too. And we got there and we thought, God, you know, there's really nothing here for us to do. And so I started working very closely with the student affairs area, student life offices, and said, we need to celebrate Black History Month. We need to have some kind of speaker or something, not knowing at all what that meant. I just knew we needed to have something. And they said, sure. Greg Henley back at that time was very, very helpful in getting us set up. And then we all had been singing in our choirs at church. And then Carla could play the piano. And many of us had been, you know, in the choir. And so we said, let's start a choir. And then that's how the Student Fellowship Choir was conceived. And we got, I think his name was Professor Charles Gaines. He helped us get everything kind of started with the Student Fellowship Choir. We got robes. You know, it was like the best thing. We thought it was
a gospel choir.
Yeah, gospel choir. And so that worked out really well. And so when we got that momentum going, then we actually said we need a club or organization. So we said we need to start a minority student union. We need something like that. And so Dean Nixon said, okay, Martha Ann Green was in career services and she said, okay, we'll support Andrea Long, we'll support. So the so everybody kept saying, yes, we'll support. And worked in a campus center, Randy Randall, Stephen Magg, and all those people said, we got you, you know, this is good. So they were very eager to help us. So if we were gonna put in the initiative and do it and get people together, they were willing to support us. Because they knew, I mean, at that time, I don't think we had very much diversity at all. I think there may have been one Latinx person and maybe two or three Asian American students. Wow. That was it. And most of the African American students were male and played football. And so that's how, you know, or basketball. And so we started the Minority Student Union. They gave us some funding. And then we started to be a part of the planning for Black History Month. And so that's how it started.
As students.
As students. Oh, yeah. All this is a student. Yeah.
All this is a student. Wow.
And also, I got involved with Student Volunteer Services and worked with Special Olympics. And so, all of my experiences just through the years just built up my real affection and love for Presbyterian. And then it came graduation time. And I was one of those students who waited until the last minute to go to the career services office and get my resume done and take all those battery of tests that I needed to take. And I took the Strong Campbell and I think it came back and told me I needed to be a social worker, a mortician or teacher. Thinking to myself, I am not gonna be a mortician. That's out, period. And then I thought, well, maybe education. So I decided to be a sociology and education major and minor. I did one stint with a practicum and I was like, no, that is not it. Wow. And I was definitely unsure of being a social worker. That didn't appeal to me either. So, you know, I went home, I think, for the fall of my senior year. And she just said, I don't care what you do, but you got to get a job. The loans have got to be paid back. Mm-hmm. So I prayed on it and I said, okay, I know I got to get a job. And, you know, it truly was nothing but divine intervention. It really was nothing but divine intervention. So it was April of my senior year and we were doing our Special Olympics program. And after that was over, I went to meet with President Orr And that, that was Kenmore that present that time. And he said, would you be interested in working at PC and serving in the role of coordinator of minority student services and student volunteer services? Okay. You know, the work that you've done as a student is what we really need, because we're trying to recruit and retain students of color. And we'd love to have you leading that effort. And I said, is this a job? Like, I didn't know anything about student affairs. As a student, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes.
Exactly. That's a job, right? Yeah.
And so he said, yes, it is. And we like for you to think about it. And so he told me to go talk to Greg Henley. So I talked to Greg, because Greg was over student volunteer services. And I went to talk to Greg, and Greg said, this would be ideal. This would be great, Sean. You've got experience in both areas. You know PC. It's been a great, you know, time to have you here. This would improve a lot of what. Now, at that time, we had no administrators of color.
Yeah, that's what I was about to.
No professors, no administrators or anything. Professor Ingram was our first faculty member.
I want to say late 80s, 87.
Yes. And so he came in first. Yeah. And I was a student, but I never got to take him, you know, for his class with Poli Sci, but yeah, he came in but we had no administrators at all.
Wow.
And so it was kind of tough.
No, that's, I mean, this is number one. Yeah. Wow. That was a history. So you mentioned that, right? Oh, and that, you know, because I think now probably three African-American faculty members, you know, some diversity around, you know, you named other minority groups, Latinx populations, Asian or whatnot, and Pacific Islander populations or whatnot, and even a little bit more diversity around staff. But you were, you know, that first director of minority affairs here. So how do you feel that the creation of that role, it seemed like you were very young at the time, which I didn't know you were made or whatnot. So I think that's important too for even some of our students to hear that, you know, just how you can impact institutional change even at such a young age. But how do you feel that the creation of a role like that was beneficial for students of color? And you kind of alluded to it a little bit before, but what was the importance of having a role like that here on PC's campus?
First of all, let me just tell you, I was just being an inquisitive student, trying to make a way for myself and others. I had always grown up on the mantra of, you know, try to make it better for those who are coming after you. And that's what I was doing. Like my fellow students and I, we were trying to make those the best 4 years. So that's why we created those organizations. And that's why we said Minority Student Union. I didn't know I was impacting institutional change. I didn't even really know those words, you know, 18 to 20 year old, you know, that's not what I'm thinking. I'm just saying we had to get the work done. And so now that I look back on it and I see how much I learned and grew, it was clearly preparing me for what I would eventually do in my life. I did not even know that student affairs was a career, a profession, because I had to convince my mom that it was a good thing, because she was saying business is where you make money. And when you make money is when you're paying back your loans. So she had to keep that. It's kind of like when students now try to convince their parents that they want to be an art major or a theater major. Those careers that are outside of the norm of a kind of automatic job in a bank or whatever, producing early money. Mm-hmm. And I'm first generation. She had no idea about what student affairs meant. And so when I found out that it was an area that I could study, then I started to take courses. My master's toward higher ed administration, student affairs administration higher education at Columbia College.
Okay.
So I would drive to Columbia back and forth, taking those classes. I could also take them at the satellite at USC Spartanburg and at Columbia College. So I was going back and forth working on my master's. And that's when everything became real. It was like, this is how you can actually impact institutional change. Like here, you're able to make some changes. And I started to see things. That's when we started, you know, we got the house, Charlotte yes. Brown Hawkins, you know, and like the name of that, you know, the name of the house. I lived in Greenwood, but I would always just kind of look around at names, and I wanted it to be something that was not everybody would be naming their houses, like Madam C.J. Walker or Mayor McLeod.
Okay.
I wanted it to be a local person. It ended up being North Carolina, but someone who had connections with education, with service, and that's how Charlotte Hawkins Brown.
So you named the house.
I did.
Wow. You just helped us off with 2 years of of what we've been researching. Okay. Wow.
Yeah,
what was the significance of the house? I mean, because I see, you know, so many photos. So many programs, it seemed like so many meals, just a real sense of community building, right? Within a sub community within a community. How significant was the house?
It was very significant. Now let me say, it was concern when we had the opportunity, when the opportunity presented itself, because it was directly across from Fraternity Court.
Yes.
And during those times, there were some unfortunate activities that were going on at Fraternity Court. And we didn't know about, you know, now we say safety, but we didn't know about those kinds of things at that time. But we knew the ability to have a house, and it just changed everything. The only space that we had was my office. And it was not a large office. I had an outer office for the administrative assistant and then my office. And that was for student volunteer services and minority affairs.
Wow.
And all of the service organizations that fell under SVS.
Wow.
And all of the cultural organizations, you know, 3, 4, 5 at that time were under, you know, in that space. So it opened up and provided many opportunities, and it provided identity. It provided an opportunity for the underrepresented students to really have an identity, and it helped with alums. We would host all of the homecoming celebrations there. We would have a cookout, you know, grass cut in the back. We go outside. It was great. I was learning as I went. I was not, I didn't know that this is what you should be doing. I just knew that I knew what the need was. I was there. I knew what the need was. The only need I couldn't do was the desire for Greek letter organizations.
Yeah.
I was not able to do that. It happened after I left. There were never enough women to do it. And of the 13 that we had, you know, each year we probably added 5, 6, 7 or whatever. There was no way we could say, okay, we know how many 12 or 13 want to be deltas and 12 want to be AKAs. We didn't have any way of making that happen. And we couldn't sustain it because our numbers fluctuated so much during that time. We didn't know if we were going to have, you know, 2 Black female students or 5, you know, it was too uncertain, too uncertain.
It is, yeah, that is, you know, and even to start your story with 13 Black women, because like I said, you know, because you brought it up in a kind of, we are, you know, I think the Black male presence has been here for a bit simply because, you know, at one point the football program or whatnot had some recognition and different things like that or whatnot, but oftentimes, I find a lot of Black women who are here, they are searching for their own institutional history here. Like, where are we here in this midst? And I see you bringing up 13 women who kind of, you know, some of you guys really got together and was like, these are things that we need, right? You know, to build community.
It was true camaraderie. And you know, those were the days of living on the halls with the pay phones at the end of the hall. You didn't have phones in your room. You didn't really have cable. You know, we had to create. We had to create what we wanted to do. And I guess the other similarity that we all shared is we weren't the type that had to be going out to parties and clubs and things such as that. And so it was easier for us to adjust to being at PC. You know, Clinton really didn't offer a social life. We went into the, we would go to the local churches when I was a student and sing. The Student Fellowship Choir would go sing there, and we would have concerts on campus in Edmonds Hall. But once I, when I started working there, I just went to all the different churches just to be a face of recognition for them and say, hey, join us at PC. And the churches were great with that. We also implemented, at that time, it was called the African American Student Overnighter. And at this point, this is when, what's his name? I think he's still there. African.
Ooh, names. In what role?
Well, he used to run Champs.
Oh, okay. Yeah. DeSasa.
Yes. Please give him my best too. He came on and he helped us with the African American Student Overnight, which basically we invited youth groups from churches to come on campus for a weekend. We provided speakers, icebreakers, talking to other students, It became twofold. One, to make a presence for Presbyterian in the community, in the Black community specifically, and as a recruitment tool. And it fit with our mission. So it was, you know, it was a successful thing. And I'm pretty sure that happened all the way. I know it happened. It was still happening when I left, but I don't know when it ended, when it did.
That's amazing. Yeah, I had to ask some more questions. Maybe post-COVID, some of these things are some things we can, you know, figure out how to bring back and how to reinvigorate that relationship with the community and the college, particularly the African-American community, kind of around you. That's really necessary.
Now, so you're going to change post-COVID-19.
Yes.
Kids would come over and they would stay in Templeton Gym.
Oh, wow.
And they would sleep overnight in the gyms so that they didn't have to pay hotel costs. Because some came from Columbia, they came from Lexington, Florence, you know, they came from all over South Carolina.
So just like sleeping bags on the
Exactly. Yeah.
No, that's amazing. Well, I just, you know, we'll close because I know you are an extremely busy woman. So I appreciate you giving me 30, 45 minutes of your time. Absolutely. I just want to, you know, close with even just a favorite memory or a significant memory, whether it's involving SBS, whether it's involving Multicultural Life, the Fellowship Choir, just some kind of memory of your time here that has left with you or that has stuck with you through the years.
So interesting enough, once I got into the position, I would take students. I always did research on like, what are other institutions doing or what should I be doing? And so I located a conference that was called Black Students on Predominantly White Campuses. And it was a conference at William & Mary.
Oh, wow.
And so I started to bring students to William & Mary on a regular basis. We paid for them, but they had to like write essays, do applications and all that in order to go, because it was a Thursday through Sunday and it was an overnight and it was like 7 hours away, but we drove in a van and boy, those were some serious trips. You don't know how you get to know students and all of that, because it was fun. I mean, that was truly a bonding experience. And for them, it was so good to be able to see and talk to in the same language other Black students on other white campuses, predominantly white campuses, and see that it wasn't just them having those feelings. And so I'd say the creation of the Student Fellowship Choir that was just so meaningful. One of my former students posted a t-shirt of one of our concerts and just talked about how, you know, how personal that experience was and how it, you know, helped people grow in their own faith, but also just added to their experience at PC. Everybody just kind of said, yeah, we need a reunion. We need a reunion. You know, so it was that part was meaningful too. And I guess the last meaningful experience is that I would sing the national anthem at all of the home women's and men's basketball games. And one year I was able to, for senior night, I was able to do Whitney Houston's One Moment in Time. That was pretty impactful.
You have to be quite the singer to be able to pull off Missy.
Yeah, it was really, really tough. Yeah, but I did all my singing at Presbyterian. When I came to Virginia, I didn't tell that not one soul. I was like, nope, I don't do that.
What leave, you know, a piece of advice, right? Because many of, you know, students, hopefully, who will see some of these, whether it's in clips or vignettes, or whether it's an entire video, many of them, you know, are in the position that you've been, you know, they're on this campus, they're trying to navigate this campus in interesting times or whatnot. It is, you know, a beautiful space, an amazing space, but it is one where, you know, you can feel, you know, in a very real way, right? that you are a Black student on a predominantly white campus, you know. And so what is one piece of advice that you would give them about navigating their own PC experience as students here?
I say any college or university is what you make it. Absolutely. And you can't sit back and expect everything to happen and be given to you. You got to take the initiative. If there are things that are not there, make them, create them, ask the questions. Because none of what I talked about would have happened had we not asked the questions. Make allies with administrators, and they will back you and support you. Get to know students across the board, not just multicultural students, all students, because you don't know, you know, they always do this at an orientation. You look to your left and look to your right, and you know, one of you may not be able to graduate because you fail out and party too much, but also look at the network that you're building. I have not been as involved with PC as I would love to. I did once I graduated, but then the distance was just so much, I just never had a chance to do it. But I will forever say that who I am today is because of Presbyterian College and the people I met and the experiences I had. And there is, there's no other way. You know, when I came to Virginia, I always had to explain and still do, what is a blue hose? But in my heart, I know what a blue hose is. And so Presbyterian made me. It really, really shaped my personal and professional goals. And it was hard to leave, but it was where I realized that you can do so much. Then it's time for somebody else to come in and take it to the next level. And fortunately, I was given an opportunity, and I could come somewhere, you know, move to another place. And then, of course, Sheila and others have come behind me and just done impactful things. And so, but I am so grateful and so thankful and blessed for every experience that I had at PC. And they weren't all good. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and say everything was good, but it taught me so much. It taught me so much.
Wow. Well, thank you, Dr. Sean Glover. I truly appreciate it. It is an honor to be in conversation with you, and I just appreciate you taking some time for sure.
Absolutely. And if there's anything I can do, you know how to reach me.
Absolutely.
If it's virtual, mostly it's virtual probably now because
of where we are. Stop the recording, Michelle.
Okay.